Short and sweet. That's what we've done with this episode of the Vermont Edition podcast. I'm Matthew Smith, producer of Vermont Edition, and I wanted to say thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. All right, you ready? Summer reading, a story that's real.
Summer reading, the next Danielle Steele.
Met a girl, crazy for me.
Met a boy, cute as can be.
Summer days, drifting away to, those summer nights. Reading, reading, reading.
All right, Mitch, you don't have to do any more of that.
What? No more? You're kidding me.
All right, Mitch, you got a second line?
That's it? No, I'm actually all
Mitch
done.
Is out of here. Yeah. That's enough for Mitch Wortley, but thank you for letting me subject you to that incredible embarrassment.
And needless to say, Jane, you owe me.
Oh, I do owe him. But here's the deal, folks. This is at least my 12th summer reading show. It's probably my 30th book show in doing Vermont Edition. And we are out of new ideas to talk about summer reading. So sorry for subjecting you to that, but appreciate you staying with us. Serenade complete. I'm here to tell you, if you couldn't guess, that today is our summer reading show on Vermont Edition. We're so excited to talk books all hour. And I'm going to get out of the way now and let the real experts do just that. We are joined today by three very happy and enthusiastic readers. Carolyn Brennan is the Director of Library Services at Montpelier's Kellogg Hubbard Library. Carolyn, thank you for not walking away during that serenade. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Star Latronica is the Library Director at the Brooks Memorial Library in Brattleboro. Star, nice to have you back on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. That was a real toe-tapper.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. And Stan Hines, thanks for coming back to you as well. Glad you're still with us. He's the adult book buyer for North Shire Bookstore in Manchester Center, Vermont, and North Shire Saratoga in Saratoga Springs, New York. Stan, hi.
Hello there. Thanks. If I had known there was going to be singing, I would have prepared something.
Oh, well, there's time. We have a full hour here. So by the end of the show, you should have a second verse for us, Stan.
I'm going to start working on it.
Carolyn, you want to start us off with talking about what's popular at the library right now? I mean, is there a sort of a summer flurry of picking up books?
Always. And right now at Kellogg Hubbard, we have a significant hold list for Where the Crawdads Sing by Delia Owens, Becoming by Michelle Obama, and Educated, a Memoir by Tara Westover. So none of those are brand new for the summertime, but they're ones where we've been working through hold lists that are 30-plus people long, and we've had to buy multiple copies.
Wow, 30-plus people long mm-hmm. for these books. So do you buy multiple copies with the idea that you want to get them in the hands now, even though later on you may not need multiple copies?
Absolutely, yeah. The minute we hit five people waiting for a book, we order a second copy, and then it goes up in multiples of five.
Star, do any of those titles sound familiar for things that are sort of staying off the shelf for a long time at Brooks Memorial Library?
Oh, gosh, yes. All those and probably a dozen more, as the previous speaker would attest. We have the same policy, and it's why librarians often lag behind in reading these books, because we want to get them out there to the public. So I haven't even read any of those three books because I'm waiting for everybody to catch up, and then I'll grab one of those multiple copies.
So, Star, you actually grab your copies right out of the library? You don't buy them at a bookstore and secretly read them at home?
Well, it depends on the book. And sometimes I'm really, really lucky that I get an advanced reading copy. And so then I can sort of be ahead of the curve. And that's what happened with the library book by Susan Orlean. Was I was able to read that before anybody else because I got an advanced library or an advanced reading copy.
Yeah, I mean that's the trick. You've got to get it before it's actually out in circulation if you're going to get to read it.
Exactly.
Stan, what about at the bookstore? Bookstores? What are people buying? What's popular?
Well, those same books are still popular. It's amazing that Educated by Tara Westover has stayed on the bestseller lists for so long. And part of the reason, of course, is it's an amazing book. And, of course, Michelle Obama's book came out last fall, and it's still very popular. And the Crawdads book, of course. I would also add a new book about Harper Lee called Furious Hours, which we can talk about a little bit, is very popular. And The Guest Book by Sarah Blake is a work of fiction that's very popular right now.
And have you read all of those? Do you get all the advanced readers?
We get all the advanced readers. Now, I've read The Guest Book. I haven't read Furious Hours, but I bet a lot of your listeners are familiar with it already. It's getting A lot of great attention, a lot of great reviews, and it's a staff favorite. And if I could talk about that just a little bit.
Yeah, please do.
The subtitle of Furious Hours is Murder, Fraud, and the Last Trial of Harper Lee by Casey Sepp. And one of my colleagues, Alden Graves, who works in the Manchester Center Store, if you'll allow me just to read just a tiny bit because I didn't read the book. But it's,
you have a shelf talker on the air for us?
I do, if you don't mind.
No.
And he says, there were very few things in Alabama during the 1970s that involved more risk than being related to Reverend Willie Maxwell. One by one, members of his family turned up dead. They all had one thing in common besides a close relationship to the Reverend. Unbeknownst to the recently deceased, he had taken out a multitude of life insurance policies on them, and with the help of an astute lawyer named Tom Radney, he collected tens of thousands of dollars from infuriated insurance companies and fended off investigations by frustrated state officials. And when Willie himself was summarily murdered at the funeral of his stepdaughter, Mr. Radney assumed the task of defending the man who shot him in front of 300 people. This would be a mesmerizing true crime story on his own merit, but the Maxwell case became the focus of years of research by Harper Lee, who hoped to repeat the success that her mentor, Truman Capote, had enjoyed with In Cold Blood. So the book is kind of 50-50, the Willie Maxwell murder story and Harper Lee's interest in it. She worked for 10 years on this story and, in fact, had a working title called The Reverend, and she wanted it to be her In Cold Blood, but she thought Truman Capote had fabricated too much in his book, and she wanted this book to be completely factual, but she just couldn't get it written. Alcoholism and reclusiveness and her eccentricity all interfered with that. But it's selling very well, and it sounds absolutely fascinating, and I recommend it to you, even though I haven't read it.
Yeah, that's a pretty fascinating storyline, it sounds like. Carolyn Brennan, you want to send us or give us a recommendation for something that you really think everybody should read?
Sure. So I like to read science fiction and fantasy novels, and I've just finished Guardian Angels and Other Monsters by Daniel H. Wilson. So I love Daniel H. Wilson. I've read a bunch of books. He wrote a book called The Clockwork Dynasty. He wrote one called Robopocalypse, and I probably don't need to tell you what that's about. and Guardian Angels is similar to those. He writes these kind of wonderfully creepy, atmospheric books about robots and how they interact and conflict with humans. So Guardian Angels is his newest book. It's a short story collection with all of those kind of regular themes. And I don't know if you've seen the Boston Dynamics videos with the mini cheetah, and you watch them kind of get progressively you watch these robots that start out very, very clunky, and they get progressively more adept at navigating terrain.
Yeah.
So I can't watch those videos anymore because I read Daniel H. Wilson, and I am incredibly creeped out by them because I see our eventual robot overlords every single time.
All right. So listeners, if you would also like to fear the future, you can read those books. Remind us the titles.
Robopocalypse, The Clockwork Dynasty, and Guardian Angels and Other Monsters.
Sounds great. Star, all right, a recommendation from you.
Okay, so before I do that, I just want to circle back for a second to The Furious, because actually that author will be at the Brattleboro Literary Festival this fall in October. So mark your calendars for that. I'm really looking forward to hearing her talk about the whole process of writing that novel or that nonfiction book. And then the list of authors for the Brattleboro Literary Festival should be going up sometime this week. And so that's where I'm going to be doing a lot of my homework to read those in advance so I can really get the most out of those lectures.
Oh, cool.
But as far as a recommendation, last night, actually, I started reading a new book called Oksana Behave. And I was laughing out loud by page 2. And by page 11, I was annoying everyone within earshot because I was laughing so hard. And it's the story of a young woman. She immigrates to this country at age 7 from the Ukraine. And it's the story of her and her wacky family and her exploits and her shenanigans all through her life. I am one of those readers that reads for character, and this book is chock full of character, of her grandma with bright red hair who's trying to pick everybody up and, you know, flirting with the crossing guard when she's, you know, coming to pick Oksana up from school. It's really, really just a great, fun time to spend with a lot of knuckleheads.
That sounds great. And I'm going to give a recommendation, too. And my recommendation is for a picture book for kids that came out in 2018 called We Don't Eat Our Classmates. And it's yeah. written and illustrated by Ryan T. Higgins. We picked it up a couple of months ago, and my kids who are 2 and 5 love it. And it's this book about a T-Rex who enters elementary school, and she's really nervous and really excited. Her name is Penelope Rex. And her parents are like, this is going to be great. You're going to see your whole classmates, and it's going to be so much fun. And she walks into school and realizes that her classmates are children. And this is terrifying to her. I think she was expecting dinosaurs. And so the first thing she does is eat them, because children are delicious. And it's a great book. It's a great read. My kids love to say, children are delicious. Ponies are delicious. Dinosaurs are delicious. But also, there's this sort of underlying message that I really like as well about how it feels to feel different, you know, to be in a classroom full of kids that seem a little different from you, and that can be uncomfortable. Most of us humans don't eat our classmates when we feel uncomfortable, but we've all been in that position. And then it also sort of addresses these questions about bullying and how to be kind and how to respect people's differences. So I really love that. It's called We Don't Eat Our Classmates by Ryan T. Higgins. And let's go to Nichol, who's calling in from Guilford. Hi, Nichol.
Hi, everyone. First, I want to say hi to Star. Well, yeah. Hi to everyone, but it's just Star is the one I see most often. I want to talk about a couple of nonfiction books that I've read recently. Probably the one that I've enjoyed most over the last few months is, it's by Adam Rutherford. It's called A Brief History of Everyone Who Ever Lived. The name is a little over the top, but it's basically about sort of the amazing advances in genetics that have taken place in the last couple of decades, particularly with the Human Genome Project, and what it tells us about the history of humans. Most of the modeling of human history has been things like from archaeology and physical anthropology, all of which is great stuff, but having the actual physical way of figuring out how populations have grown and migrated and intermingled over time is just, it's an amazing book.
Hmm.
The other author is Gaston Doren, D-O-R-R-E-N. What he deals with are how different languages are. I think a lot of people, and I certainly know true in my case, that when you think of different languages, you just think of different groups of words. And that it's sort of like you sort of might imagine the underlying languages are the same. You just speak them with different words. But what he's done, he has two books. One is called Lingo, and one is called Babel. What they basically do is survey a number of languages and go into the details of how really different languages are, the various features that each language has. Lingo, he did surveyed 60 languages around Europe, and Babel, which is his most recent book, which came out of 2 or 3 months ago. It's sort of 20 languages around the world. But he's a really engaging writer, and I just thought these were wonderful books.
Nichol, thank you for those recommendations. I really appreciate that. I appreciate hearing from you. And we are writing down all of these recommendations that come in over the phone and on Twitter and on email, and we will try to publish a list right after the show. So give us a little bit of time to get that up. But in case you can't quite catch every title, but something has really caught your fancy, we will try to keep a whole list of everything that is being spoken about. Julie is calling in from St. Albans. Hi, Julie.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my call. I had a quick comment and also a question to pose for you wonderful people. The two books that I am reading, one is The Mueller Report. Woohoo! But I thought it was really important to read it, to get my own opinion of it instead of just listening to snippets on the news. And I'm also reading a book called The Winter Loon, by Susan Bernhard. Fantastic book. My question is, I say read and I kind of put it in quotes because I work a very long day, and when I get home, I'm finding I'm too tired to read. So I listen on audio to to audiobooks. So my question is that considered reading?
Julie, before... go ahead.
My friends and I kind of get into a very healthy argument, is it considered reading? And so when I say I read, I mostly listen to audiobooks, so I just wanted to get your opinion.
Well, Julie, I have two questions for you before we turn it over to our guests. And first of all, I want to know, just in terms of sheer readability, how are you finding the Mueller Report? Really scintillating reading or not so well written? What's your take on it?
I'm finding it fascinating. And just when you're about to, like, really get sucked in, it'll say, redacted for security reasons. You're like, oh.
I bet there's a novel out there that also includes redaction. And if anybody knows of one, I would love to know a novel that uses that tool of redacting things to try to create the suspense that Julie seems to be feeling. And then, Julie, on audiobooks, for me, I love listening to audiobooks. And I often find that wherever I was listening, if I go back to that physical place, I remember parts of the book. Like, the book seems like it was set there rather than set wherever the book is supposed to be set. But I also find that I remember less because I think I may be a little bit more distracted sometimes when I'm listening. So, Julie, what about you? Do you think audiobooks count as reading?
I just consider it just fantastic storytelling. I always loved having books read to me and stories told to me, and it's almost like the two of them put together. I love it. I absolutely love it because, you know, books now at the bedside table are becoming sleeping material, and it's just not fair. I've been reading, like, one book now for 2 years because I get two sentences in, and then I'm asleep.
Julie, thanks. Well, Carolyn Brennan, what do you think? Do audiobooks count?
I used to have a very long commute to work, and I listened to audiobooks continually. And audiobooks absolutely count. You know, we're very clear when we're doing the summer reading program that any time, especially for children, listening to a book counts. But it's absolutely true for adults. You're taking a book that's already great, and then you're pairing it with a great narrator, and it adds another level of imagery and power to the text. You know, I have notes about audiobooks that I brought today, and so it was funny when you said the piece about nostalgia with having a book read to you as a child, because that value is there, and it adds this kind of additional layer of comfort. And for me, I love language and I love the sound and the rhythm of words. And so when you're listening to a tale that's told well, it's always a delightful experience and adds to the story for me.
Do you find that you have a different sort of memory, or you digest it differently than when you think about it?
Yeah, I find that audiobooks, if I'm listening to something that's nonfiction, sometimes I remember facts better. If I'm listening to one of the examples that I might, you know, bring up later is Alan Bradley's Flavia de Luce novels. Mm-hmm. And the narrator that does those, her name is Jane Entwistle. And she has this voice that I'll never hear Flavia de Luce in my own head. If I'm reading a book, I will never not hear it in Jane Entwistle's voice, because she just captures the character perfectly. She's spot on for the role.
Yeah, I felt that way about the Harry Potter books. The guy who read the Harry Potter books was just, I mean, his voice is in my head.
Absolutely.
We're talking about books today. Books, books, more books. Share your recommendations with us, or you can ask for a specific type of recommendation. I'm going to read this question that is a request, and then after the break, we're going to talk about it. So Diana says, I'm desperately looking for the meatiest, most compelling book in the smallest, lightest weight version to take on a 2-month backpacking trip. Oh, and it has to be available locally since we leave soon and I prefer not to shop online. Now, I don't know what town Diane is in, but we're looking, you know, in locally in Vermont. Colleen wrote in to say, I frequently borrow the New York Times Book Review magazine from the local library and scour the pages for reading ideas. They are kind enough to leave older editions accessible, so I often choose those editions for an improved chance of finding the book. And Colleen recommends Where'd You Go, Bernadette, a novel written by Maria Semple Offers. It offers a cast of characters to warm the heart and a storyline doing the same, a comical and touching story written for young adults and enjoyed by this non-young adult. Daniel Holtz in Colchester wants to recommend his own book. He says, I published a book for kids this year called Stinkleberry Pie and Other Ridiculous Rhymes. I'll be sharing the poetry at the Vermont Farmers Markets this summer. Thank you for that, Daniel. Thomas says, this summer I will reread the series of Aubrey Maturin novels by Patrick O'Brien. There are 20 in all, plus one unfinished. The first is Master and Commander. I'll be reading most of the time on my sailboat in the Gulf of Maine. Sounds nice, Thomas. All right. And I've given you some time to think about the question that we got from Diana, who's looking for the meatiest, most compelling book in the smallest, lightest weight version to take on a 2-month backpacking trip. Oh, and it has to be available locally. Stan, what have you got for us?
Unfair, I tell you. That. And she didn't say fiction or nonfiction, right?
No, just meaty and compelling. So it seems like it's wide open. The book just either needs to be very small type or rather short or a thin paper or something.
I guess. Okay, well, then I'm going to have to talk about a book that I didn't prepare to talk about. So I quickly...
When we get you off your talking points, that's our favorite part.
Okay, great. Well, fun for you. But I'm going to suggest a book called All We Shall Know by Donald Ryan. It's fiction. It's Irish. And I guess it's meaty. It's certainly compelling. It was one of my favorite books I read a couple of years ago. And it's about a woman in her early 30s. And I'm not going to remember people's character, the characters' names, by the way, okay, because that's asking too much. But she's in her early 30s. She's pregnant. Her husband is not the father. She becomes friends with what they call travelers, which think gypsy. In fact, think Van Morrison's Caravan. And she becomes friends with this young traveler, and she's like 19. And the relationship between these two women is so beautiful and interesting. There's a bit of violence in this book, and it's thin, so at least it meets that requirement. And for me, it was extremely compelling, which is kind of congruent to meaty. So that's going to be my answer to the question.
And remind us the title again.
All We Shall Know by Donald Ryan, and Donald is spelled D-O-N-A-L.
Excellent. All right. I like that recommendation. Star, what have you got for us?
So one of the books I'm working my way through this summer is Jill Lepore's These Truths, which is over 900 pages and not yet available in paperback. So I don't recommend that for the trip. However,
well, wait. You know, you're actually answering some. So Sherry in South Stratford emailed in to say, could anyone recommend a fat book, a doorstop of a book? I really love thick books. So you have answered Sherry's question.
Absolutely. And it's just genius. But the other book that Jill wrote a couple years ago was The Secret History of Wonder Woman, which is now available in paperback, but it is a very compelling tale of the development of the character of Wonder Woman and, again, that crazy cast of characters that was involved in it, including Margaret Sanger and her sister and a very unique family composition that contributed to all of it. So I highly recommend that. And like I said, it is available in paperback. And you get so much more than Wonder Woman. You really get the whole context of that generation and that bohemian lifestyle that people had in those days.
Carolyn, you want to pass since you got to talk audiobooks, or have you got one for us?
I'm racking my brain, and everything I can think of that's really compelling and meaty is also thick, so I'll pass.
I've been looking in my mind at my bookshelf at home, and I can see a really slim volume, and I just can't think of what it is, because I've culled over the years, so my bookshelf has the books that have really been meaningful to me over the years, and I can't quite reach the title of whatever it is on my bookshelf.
Maybe something like Between the World and Me.
Mm.
That was great. Or Citizen and American Lyric. Those are both kind of slim volumes, but very compelling.
Oh, see, there you go already. Perfect. Let's go to Cliff, who's calling in from Bristol. Cliff, you got an idea for us.
Yes. Well, I'd like to recommend a book that many of us have read, and it's a very old book, but it's Homer's Odyssey, which has been translated by Emily Wilson, the first woman to translate it in 3,000 years. And I have it on very good authority from Odysseus himself, albeit it's Odysseus Manzi, who works at the vet center in Berlin. Odysseus says, you know, that what Emily Wilson has done is turn this book almost into a graphic novel by bringing it alive so much. And everybody that's read it, even people that have read the Odyssey, it has a 95-page introduction, And everybody says, boy, the introduction is really good and the book is really great. So Emily Wilson, Homer's Odyssey, it's about time that a woman translated it.
Cool. Well, Cliff, thank you for that recommendation. And boy, you made it compelling to think about wanting to read that book again in a new translation. So thank you for that. Jim writes in to say, I was working on the graphic novel Berlin by Jason Lutz at the same time I was reading Eric Larson's In the Garden of Beasts. Mm. Both are really good and both hitting some of the same ideas from different angles. And we'll try to post a link to our interview with Jason Lutz about that graphic novel Berlin, which to Sherry in South Stratford, who's looking for a doorstop of a book. It is a graphic novel, but it is a really, really big, thick, ambitious graphic novel that took him, I think, a decade to write. And so that might be a really good choice. You don't think of graphic novels as something that's going to take you a long time to get through and that you're going to have to really read carefully. But I would say that is one because I loved it, but it was really dense and really complex and interesting to read. So Berlin, and Jim is reading that and recommending maybe reading together with In the Garden of Beasts. Alan says, Nutshell by Ian McKevy, incredible fiction writing written in the voice of a not-yet-born child. Maybe he means Ian McEwan, I think. And Judith says, I'm not sure if anyone has mentioned the new book Fall and Rise by Mitchell Zukov. It's about 9/11, and it was terrifying, heartbreaking, heartwarming, and so important to remember all that happened then and continues to reverberate in our world and culture. Rebecca Siegel, who's co-founder of Literary North, which is a blog and an online calendar for literary happenings in Vermont and New Hampshire, wrote in and recommended some things as well. And she writes, Black is the Body by Vermont author Emily Bernard, a beautifully written book of essays that are utterly captivating. It begins with a riveting description of the author being stabbed and then ranges through stories of her life, her family and childhood in the South, her experience as a Black woman in Vermont, married to a white man, being a mother. Her essays are revealing and inviting. I couldn't put it down. And we'll also try to link you to Mitch Wortlieb's interview with Emily Bernard on that book, a really fascinating interview along with a fascinating book. Rebecca Siegel also recommends the poetry collection Good Woman by Lucille Clifton, saying, her poems are short, so I enjoy dipping into this book a poem at a time between reading other things. It often feels somewhat like laying out a tarot card, the poem acting as a reading on my day or mood, or a reflection of my thoughts. I am always moved by Clifton's point of view, her directness, her solidity, and her gentle strength. So those are some recommendations from Rebecca Siegel. Let's go to Joseph calling in from Winooski. Joseph, what are you recommending?
Hi, how are you?
Great.
So on the topic of meaty books, especially just for like backpacking, I actually have to recommend the complete works of William Shakespeare.
Joseph, that is not going to be small for a backpacking trip.
You know, you would think that. I picked up a copy at Costco for like $15. And the type is really small, and it was actually pretty compact.
All right, good to know.
To be honest. It was like $15. I was like, yeah, why not? $15. But my favorite book that I probably recommend to anyone, I read it probably about once a year, is 10% Happier by Dan Harris.
Why?
It's because you would think it's like a self-help book, but it reads more like an autobiography, and it's all about like how he finds mindfulness and like secular meditation, like secular Buddhist meditation. It's really just a really interesting book.
Hmm. Well, Joseph,
and
yeah, go
ahead. Audiobook, mm-hmm. The audiobook is read by Dan Harris. So not only is he reading it in his words, but you also get the like inflection of his voice, like the way he would tell the story. So it's a really great audiobook as well.
Joseph, thanks for that. 10% Happier, recommending that, and audiobook form, really great. Thank you for that recommendation. Star Electronica, I want to come back to you because we just got that recommendation for Black is the Body, the Emily Bernard book. And, you know, that's one that's on my list. I cannot wait to read that book. And I'm wondering, you know, if you have thoughts, because I know this is something that you've been thinking about, books that tackle race and gender and some themes that you're seeing and how people are approaching these concepts through books, particularly right now in this moment in time.
Absolutely. We have an intense interest in this community to really explore those themes and understand the people around us. And so those are some of our most popular titles. And in fact, I noticed in yesterday, I believe it was the New York Times, Ibram X. Kendi came out with a How to Be an Anti-Racist book list. And he has a new book coming out in August, which is actually titled How to Be an Anti-Racist. A lot of people in this community are reading Waking Up White, and Dying of Whiteness. There's an intense curiosity both among adults and among kids to really explore these themes and to really understand the world around them and pass the boundaries of Brattleboro, but into the greater world.
That's a great recommendation. I appreciate that and appreciate hearing and thinking about people who are grappling with these ideas and trying to think about their own place in the world in addition to, you know, and in sort of context with other people and how other people see their place in the world and how we're all sort of trying to do that together and maybe thinking about it more and in different ways than we have in the past. Listeners, yeah, go ahead. Star, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, actually, I was going to say just last Friday night we had a celebration of Walt Whitman's 200th birthday, and one of the quotes that we pulled from him was, "Be curious, not judgmental." And I find that that's a real theme with people in this area right now.
They're curious
and not judgmental. And be open to other things and other lives and other cultures.
You say in this area right now, you think it's unique to the Brattleboro area, or do you think that's sort of just happening everywhere in small pockets?
Well, because this is where I am, I know it's happening here, and I think it's happening in a broader consciousness in the country as well.
Paul in Bridport says, I'd like to recommend The Real Global Warming Disaster by Christopher Booker. He's a journalist in the UK and recent history account of climate change events around the world. It's the most important thing happening in the world today. Elizabeth says, two lightweight but meaty book suggestions for our listener looking for one to take along on a hiking trip, a backpacking trip, are A Gift from the Sea by Anne Morrow Lindbergh or Khalil Gibran's The Prophet. Both are meaty for sure, and I've read them again and again, Elizabeth says. And she adds, happy backpacking. And Randall says, with Father's Day coming up, I recommend Five Skies by Ron Carlson. It gives insight into the habits and beliefs of old school craftsmen. About halfway in, I realized he was writing about a generation of fathers I knew well. Francis is with us from Middlesex. Francis, you have a recommendation. Hi.
I have a few, and I'll condense it into a little story. I was at a dinner party last night with some authors. And I'm delighted to say that a caller before me took one of my recommendations, Emily Bernard's Black as the Body. Mm-hmm. So we were all at dinner last night. I was with Emily and her husband, John Gennari. So I'll recommend his book, Flavor and Soul. And he writes about travel and jazz and Italian-American culture. And he's heading off to Italy soon together. More notes, I assume. And anything by Major Jackson was one of my great mentors in college when I was at UVM. He was at the dinner party last night, and we did a book trade. So I got a book by Emily and John, and then I gave them my new book that I just published, which is called Walter Benjamin Reimagined, just by MIT Press, and it just came out this month. So local authors and great books.
Cool. Thank you for those recommendations. I appreciate that. Nice to hear what you're reading and what you're thinking about. And I love the idea of the book swap. That's very cool. A microbiologist writes in to say, I recommend What the Eyes Don't See by Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha. Amazing book written by the pediatrician who was instrumental in blowing the cover off the Flint, Michigan lead in the water crisis. People who enjoy nonfiction will love this book, and it makes me really proud that Vermont is being proactive in testing for lead in water at all of our public schools. And Susan emails in another recommendation for Jill Lepore's These Truths, A History of the United States, saying it's a worthwhile summer read. It's not a beach read at nearly 800 pages. It's too heavy. Lepore covers the entire history of this country from European conquest to Trumpian disruption through the lens of our founding ideals of political equality, rights, and democracy. Unlike any other U.S. history book I have read, Lepore's book includes African Americans, women, and indigenous people's struggle for equal rights and political inclusion. And Carolyn Brennan, you bought some books for kids that also try to look at this idea of inclusion and different perspectives. And I think that's something in particular in children's literature and even really young children's literature that's getting a lot of attention now, trying to make sure that there are a lot of different options for parents to read to children and adults to read to children and for children to read for themselves once they're that age, a real changing point, it seems like, in children's lit.
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing a lot more of that. And when I buy books for the children's library, I'm looking at making sure that we have a bunch of different perspectives included. And so one of the books that I brought is called The Roots of Rap, 16 Bars on the Pillars of Hip Hop. And it's written by Carol Boston Weatherford and illustrated by Frank Morrison. So I love this book because it's written like a rap song, which makes it wonderfully rhythmic. So you read it. It's a great read aloud. It has the illustrator was a graffiti artist at one point, and so it has these big, bold, colorful illustrations that are leaping off the page at you. But it's also a timeline for the history and origins of rap through the lens of hip-hop and R&B music. And for those of us that didn't grow up with this kind of in our vocabulary or didn't encounter children's literature that came from this perspective, it also has a glossary at the end. So you can learn what a b-boy is or, you know, maybe some of these things that I know I didn't encounter growing up in Barnet. So, and then the other one that I'd love to talk about really quickly is called Julian is a Mermaid. And that is... it's a book about gender fluidity. It's on the current year's Red Clover list. It's by Jessica Love. And it uses this idea of a mermaid, somebody that's glamorous and who changes and transforms, to tell the story of this little boy who tells his grandma that he is a mermaid. And by the end of the book, you see this him have this beautiful transformation. And it's a book that is very sparse on words. And so it uses this imagery and it uses facial expressions and to tell this kind of wonderful, transformative, inclusive story.
Wow. Sounds very cool. Stan, I want to hear from you. What's another book that you recommend in any genre and on any topic?
Okay, good. Back to my notes. But first, I want to say that the listener who recommended Five Skies by Ron Carlson is right. That book is unreal. It is such a good recommendation for Father's Day. Hmm. It's probably 10 years old. I love that book so much. And I'm also going to tie in your Shakespeare guy to the Ian McEwan reader because Nutshell, which I also loved, is a retelling of Hamlet by a fetus. Enjoy. All right. So I'm going to recommend an adventure novel by Peter Heller. He wrote three other novels that I love, Dog Stars, The Painter, and Celine, and all of which I recommend. His newest is called The River. It's about two college friends, one from Colorado, one from Vermont, and they're taking a long paddle down a unspoiled river in the Canadian wilderness. And they should be all by themselves. They're out in the middle of nowhere, but they encounter two other parties on this trip. One is a couple, and they're clearly not getting along by what the guys can hear from their boat. And then also they encounter two men who kind of seem suspicious and out of place, and they're really well supplied with alcohol. Now, one of these encounters is going to lead to a rescue mission. But if that weren't enough, the guys smell something on the wind, literally, and they climb a tree at a high place and see a glow on the horizon. And so they know there's a forest fire. And as time passes, they realize that the forest fire is getting closer. So they know how far they have to go. They know about how long it's going to take them to get to Hudson Bay, and they don't know if they're going to make it. And, of course, you know, the book is half about a forest fire, so you know they're going to have to deal with this. But those other problems, those other parties don't go away. It is very exciting. It's really suspenseful, full of great writing about the outdoors. Peter Heller is a great outdoorsman himself, mm-hmm. So there's great fishing scenes and nature scenes and camping scenes. I really love this book. It's kind of like Deliverance without all the really creepy stuff. So it's The River by Peter Heller.
The River by Peter Heller. Ooh, good. I have two books that are on my list that I'm sort of starting now or in the middle of that are really compelling to me, and they're both by local authors. Howard Norman's new book, The Ghost Clause, is coming out soon, and I think at the very beginning of July. I can't wait to read this piece of fiction that takes place largely in the library of his actual Vermont home, and there are a lot of cameos by real Vermont people that we're going to recognize. And I'm very excited because I'm going to interview Howard Norman in the library in his Vermont home so we can talk about the ghosts in the library in the library. And then I've also started reading a book called Rough House Friday. It's by an author named Jed Coffin. Jed is spelled J-A-E-D. Jed Coffin grew up in Grand Isle. And full disclosure, he and I were childhood friends. But this book appeared from the publisher on my desk, not from Jed. And I thought, wait a minute. And it's this coming-of-age story that really revolves around his discomfort in the world, Jed's discomfort in the world, being half Thai and half American, and trying to sort of come to grips with his own identity and his parents' divorce and his relationship with his military father, and how he both wanted to be his father and be different from his father. And then this is a memoir, and then Jed goes on a sort of a spiritual journey, a coming of age journey, and becomes a part of the boxing circuit in Alaska. And that's sort of how he finds himself. And so this book revolves around his life in Alaska and then looking back at his life growing up in Maine and Vermont. It's called Rough House Friday. It comes out on June 18th. And I am so loving the book, not only as a friend of the author, but also just as a piece of literature and a piece of memoir and nonfiction. So that's my recommendation. We got a note from Emily who says, I just finished a great book written for middle school students through adult called The Truth as Told by Mason Buttle by Leslie Connor. This is a wonderful written book that tugs at all of your emotions. My heart broke for the main character, Mason, and then was wonderfully healed. In between, it was so exciting that I couldn't put it down. Star, I think I heard you gasp audibly at that recommendation.
I love that book. Yes. And it was a finalist for the National Book Award last year, too.
Again, it's called The Truth as Told by Mason Buttle. All right. So we've got like 1 minute. Let me just go through all three of you. And if there's something that's on your list that you're like, you had to ask me about this, we haven't gotten to it, we'll just rapid fire through them. So, Stan, what's yours?
Courting Mr. Lincoln by Timothy Bayard.
Courting Mr. Lincoln by Timothy Bayard. Star Latronica, what about you?
The Robin Hoodlum series by Kekla Magoon, who is also a Vermont author. And we have so many good Vermont authors for kids. And this is a heart-stopping, heart-racing kind of adventure series.
What's it called again?
The Robin Hoodlum. It's the Robin Hoodlum series. And Rebellion of the Thieves is the first one.
Cool. And Carolyn Brennan, what about for you? What do you recommend?
I'm going to add The Assassination of Brangwain Spurge by M.T. Anderson and Eugene Yelchin.
Hmm. Because?
Oh, because another local author, and a book that's told half in text and half in pictures with differing perspectives. And it's just, it's hilarious and delightful. And a joy through the whole thing.
Ah, well, how could you, and how could anybody avoid that if the recommendation is hilarious and joyful and wonderful through the whole thing? I really appreciate all three of you being here, sharing some of your expertise, and helping us along with all of our great listener suggestions. This is so great. Carolyn Brennan is Director of Library Services at Montpelier's Kellogg Hubbard Library. Star Latronica is Library Director at the Brooks Memorial Library in Brattleboro. And Stan Hines is the adult book buyer for the Northshire Bookstore in Manchester Center, Vermont, and Northshire Saratoga in Saratoga Springs, New York. Thanks to all three of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks very much.